This is The Takeout.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
With Major Garrett.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
At this defining moment, change has come to America.
And we will make America great again.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett, Chief White House Correspondent of CBS News, joined as I am every week by the world's greatest podcast sidekick, Steve Shigaris, Political Director of CBS News. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Major.
Don't get nervous, Steve.
Before we get into the basics of the show, I want to do something. We want to welcome all of our new listeners on these great, great radio stations. KMOX in St. Louis, WCCO in Minneapolis, WTMJ in Milwaukee, WECK WEC in Buffalo, KXNT in Las Vegas, and WJJF FM in Montauk, Long Island, New York. Steve, we are huge in Montauk.
Huge. You know, that's reminiscent of Casey Kasem back in the day when he would welcome the new stations.
I am the new Casey Kasem, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, we say a hearty and enthusiastic hello to our podcast subscribers and our avid fans on CBSN. Hello, gang. That's our digital news network. Now, for you who are brand new to this experience, what is The Takeout? Well, very simply, it's a conversation about politics, policy, and pop culture. Always conducted over a meal. This episode, it's lunch. We're at the Dubliner Restaurant right near Capitol Hill, a place we've been before, and I guarantee you a place we will be again. Now, this show travels the vast and fascinating ideological spectrum of American politics. How vast, you might ask yourself? Well, last week, Rick Perry, conservative Republican, former governor of Texas, now energy secretary in the Trump administration. This week, Joseph Kennedy III, grandson of Robert F. Kennedy, and in Congress, the living embodiment of the Kennedy progressive political dynasty. Congressman Kennedy, we welcome you to the Takeout Podcast microphone.
Wow, well, that was quite an intro.
I'm big into intros.
I was going to say, thank you. If you're Casey Kasem, I don't know quite what that makes me, but thrilled to be here. Thanks.
Steve, yes. Because you are a native of Lynn, Massachusetts, and of course Congressman Kennedy is from Massachusetts, do our listeners a favor and do the Massachusetts and also Kennedy family tree.
Is it official? I didn't know there was an official.
It's official designation, absolutely. Because no one who grew up as I did in San Diego, California, has any mojo in this area at all.
Really?
So the Massachusetts thing, it's all you.
If you can get the Kennedy family tree right, I'm going to be very
I'm going to keep it simple, right? Just for people who want to know, you mentioned, Major, that he is the grandson of RFK. That means you are the great-nephew of former President John F. Kennedy,
yep,
and the great-nephew of former Senator Ted Kennedy, and the son of former Congressman Joseph Kennedy II, who Major and I covered in our careers
years ago. Patrick Kennedy is related to you how?
He's my cousin, essentially.
Right. I covered Patrick Kennedy. I covered your great-uncle Edward Kennedy and Joseph Kennedy, all of them
there
in Congress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Family affair.
But
there
you go.
You're the only one that's an elected official currently in the Kennedy clan, correct?
Currently, yes. Yeah. Yes. At a federal level. So there's my cousin Teddy, so Senator Kennedy's son, is a state senator in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. My cousin William Smith is a city councilor actually here in Washington, D.C. So
there you go.
There's a couple around.
Politics, public service in every direction.
There you go.
Just about.
At an Irish bar.
Which is only coincidental, really.
Perfect.
It's only coincidental. So let's talk about one of the issues that is pressing in Congress and will be pressing on the agenda of Congress for the next few weeks, tax reform. We still haven't seen the details of the bill.
Me neither.
We have broad outlines. I'm gathering you're against it.
It's
in
hard to
concept and whenever the specifics come out, you'll probably be against those as well.
It is hard to be for or against something that we haven't seen.
Right.
So why don't we start with that? I would love to be able to get to a place where I'm going to be for this. I will say, obviously, at this point, I have my reservations. Some of the at least top lines that have come out have, and whatever independent analyses have come out so far, have indicated that the benefits of the tax proposal will predominantly go to the wealthiest 1% or even 0.1% of Americans, and that is essentially a double down on the trickle-down economics. And so, yes, I have some ideological differences there. That being said, look, what I think everybody deserves, not just members of Congress, but the American public, just what the details of a tax plan are going to be, right? You're overhauling. Healthcare was really hard because it's really personal. It's also 1/6 of our economy. Taxes is 100% of our economy. The idea that you're somehow trying to get this done on a time frame now of trying to rush this through Congress in a matter of 6 weeks is kind of crazy, because I think the American public deserve to understand how these policies are going to impact their pocketbooks, their families' economic future, and their business's ability to do business. And that's not something we should rush.
And from a public policy position, do you think they're withholding details because they can't figure them out and they don't know the underlying politics of what they can write and therefore what they can vote for, or they're just trying to hold it to the last minute and jam it through?
Look, I think
to avoid scrutiny.
I think it's a bit of both, Major. I think that the challenge, look, there's a political reality and then there's a kind of a governing reality. And the political reality is that while I think the country's actually pretty evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans. You've got Hillary Clinton, who won a popular vote. Obviously, President Trump is in the White House. He won the election,
won the
period,
electoral vote. Yeah.
Period, right? The Senate is essentially pretty much even, 52-48, right? And Republicans have a sizable majority in the House of Representatives, but won about 2 million more votes across the country than Democrats did. So my takeaway from that is that the country is actually pretty centrist. It just so happens that as the chips fall, they all line up Republican. Fine. They won the election. That's the votes. That's the reality. The issue there, though, is that you then start governing from a pretty conservative framework rather than a centrist one. So as they've set up similarly with healthcare, trying to do it through this arcane process called reconciliation, where you only need a majority vote, when you're doing that again with tax reform, you're not actually putting forth a good faith effort to engage with Democrats, understanding they might not like the ideas that I would have forward there. That's fine. But there is a way that I think opening up, similar to what Senator McCain's objections on healthcare were, there are some good ideas that Democrats can put forth that actually provide a stronger policy framework for overhauling the country's economics. And the fact that we're not going through that process, I think, should give everybody pause.
I mean, that's part of being in the minority, right?
Yeah.
You know, but one question,
the majority rule, especially in the House.
It's the reality of majority rules, especially in the House. And again, they won an election. That's the reality
of it.
That's how it works. That's how it works. The challenge becomes on reconciliation and on particularly using that policy framework, or that what's a budgetary framework, when you have such a narrow majority, 52-48, when your goal is essentially to try to get 50 votes and then have the vice president break a tie, you're not trying to do what perhaps the majority of the country wants you to do. You're trying to do what the politics allows you to do. And those are two actually very different things. And so, look, that's coming from somebody that my entire career I've been in the minority. I would love for that to change. But there's still...
We'll get to that in a minute.
There's still the issue here is... What is best for a Republican base, what's best for a Democratic base, isn't necessarily reflective of the overall broad priorities and policies for a nation. And if you're going to overhaul the tax code, one would like to think that you'd be willing to take into account the policies and the priorities that would affect communities like Boston and Massachusetts the same way that you would Mississippi, Texas, and Oklahoma.
I'd be willing to argue that they're actually trying to jab places like that. You talk about the one deduction that they want to get rid of, which is the state and local tax deduction. And that really, at least if you listen to Republicans, is targeted toward states that have high state and local taxes. In fact, Massachusetts, according to the Boston Globe, would be the fifth most affected by that in terms of, and the other four are very blue states. I guess the question is, one, do you buy the Republican argument that deduction just gets these states to raise taxes because they know that the federal government's going to cushion them, or do you think it's really a jab at Democratic states?
And you have 45 seconds.
I think it's a jab at Democratic states. I think you can come up with a policy justification for it. However, I think it's a jab at Democratic states. Look, we went right back through this with health care in the last version of that health care bill with Graham Cassidy. What was the structure of that? States had to lose in order for other states to win, which is absurd. You don't have to conduct healthcare that way in the United States of America. But in order to extend, under their definition, healthcare to folks in Texas and Mississippi and Missouri, you had to actually limit it in Massachusetts and Maryland and California and New York. There's no reason for that. None. It's just the idea that you're going to somehow try to come up with a fair, better tax policy in this country by penalizing blue states is just crazy. That's not an American tax policy.
That's the voice of Joseph Kennedy III. You're listening to The Takeout.
What if hiring could be easier, more streamlined, and less time-consuming? So even when you're busy, you could still be smart about the way you hire. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, listeners to The Takeout can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/takeout. That's ZipRecruiter.com/takeout. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/takeout.
You're listening to The Takeout.
And thoroughly enjoying The Takeout. I'm Major Garrett, joined as I am every week by Steve Shigaris, political director of CBS News. Our special guest this week, Joseph Kennedy III, congressman of the 4th District of Massachusetts and part of the larger Kennedy family political dynasty. We're going to order lunch now here at the Dubliner. So, Ralph, our expert waiter, please bring me a Coleman Club, if you'd be so kind.
Would you like fries with that?
Please, always fries. Always, always. And if you can drizzle cheese or bacon on them, just go right ahead.
Cheese and bacon?
Whatever.
Whoa. How about that?
There we go. Grilled Congressman.
Grilled chicken BLT, please.
Chicken fries, okay?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Shigaris.
Tuna sandwich with fries. Thank you.
Congressman, as we were going to break,
the first break,
we had a little bit of conversation about health care and tax reform. I want to shift a little bit to health care because there is something that you said that caught the attention of Facebook advocates and viewers across the country. I think more than a million. Was that the right number, Shigaris?
I think that sounds right.
Views on Facebook, something you said in the context
the
of House deliberation on health care.
Almost as popular as kittens.
So that's Arden, number 5, please.
There is no mercy in a system that makes health care a luxury. There is no mercy in a country that turns their back on those most in need of protection, the elderly, the poor, the sick, and the suffering. There is no mercy in a cold shoulder to the mentally ill. There's no mercy in a policy that takes for granted the sweat, the tears, and the sacrifice of working Americans that they shed every day so that they might care for their family's basic needs, food, shelter, health, and hope for tomorrow. There's no mercy.
Gentlemen's
the 2.6
time has
million
expired.
People who will lose their job if Obamacare is repealed. This is not
chair,
an act of mercy.
Chair now recognizes gentlelady from Washington State.
If you didn't hear that last part, an act of malice, repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. Now, the president, as you know, and those who speak on behalf of the president, call the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, a disaster, one that is failing, leaving a great number of counties in this country with one insurance provider or, in some cases, higher premiums, very high deductibles, lots of systemic problems they find with the Affordable Care Act. Do you find any of those criticisms of the Affordable Care Act, and we'll get to repeal and replace in a second, valid?
Yes. Look, so Major, I can't. So I come at this, obviously, as somebody that cares deeply about every American's ability to gain access to quality, affordable, accessible health care, period. I also come at this from the perspective of a representative from Massachusetts. And look, no major piece of policy is ever going to be perfect. But if you look at Massachusetts, we've got about 98% of our people with health coverage. We've got one of the robust, most robust economies anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world. It's hard to say that healthcare reform in Massachusetts is a failure. It's hard to say that. So living that, seeing that, understanding the policies at place there, it's hard to say that this law can't work. The bottom line, though, is I also cannot deny that in certain other parts around the country that the ACA struggles to actually be implemented as fully and effectively as it has been in Massachusetts. Now, we can get into the reasons as to why that might be. One, look, healthcare delivery, trying to make sure that people get access to care, is very different in an urban setting like Boston with 5 academic medical centers than it is in rural Oklahoma or Missouri or Texas. That's just, it's an entirely different animal. True, right? And we have to account for that. There's also a reality that I think we have to acknowledge that there was a political decision that was made in many of these states that have seen such struggles with the successful implementation
of the ACA. Not to expand Medicaid.
And to not actually try to make this law work. Look, legislation is hard, and you're trying to come up with a piece of policy that, for most Americans, you don't care really about healthcare until you need to. And when you need to, it's the most important thing you care about. And so trying to craft a federal law that actually gets all of that right is going to be hard. What that means is you have to be humble enough to know that you're going to constantly have to improve it. What we haven't been able to do is, because I think of the poison politics on this, is try to find ways to, one, expand Medicaid in some of these communities, which, remember, under the initial version of that law, wasn't supposed to be optional, right? That was obligatory. And then, two, actually iterate off of this, which, to be fair, again, in Massachusetts, we have been able to do to every at every iteration, including one right now. We see what's working, what's not, and we try to correct it, including, by the way, with an overwhelmingly Democratic state legislature, but under successive Republican governors. And there is a bipartisan commitment to try to make this work. If you have that commitment to try to make it work, you can actually do it pretty well.
So what happens next? I mean, clearly this president is committed, maybe you could say, to not making it work and to moving on from the ACA. What do Democrats do other than shake their fists at this president and at Republicans in Congress and say, we've got to keep this? This is we're rolling down the path of this not being the Obamacare that was implemented. And then the second question is where are Democrats going to land on health care eventually? There's a big debate going on whether single payer is the answer, and how does that affect the debate moving forward?
So a couple things. First off, I'd say, well, yes, this is a political question. It's far more than that. So respectfully, yes, there's a Democratic, kind of where do Democrats go going forward and what do we do in the immediate crisis that we're in? What you saw over the course of the past 6 or 7 months and crystallized over the summer was that this was not a Democratic issue, right? This was an issue of doctors, of patient groups, of nurses, of senior citizens, of healthcare providers, of insurance companies, literally every single group that has a stake in healthcare stand up and say, this bill is terrible. Whichever iteration of the bill that came forth, whether it was the House versions or the Senate versions, this wasn't Democrats against Republicans. This was literally most of America standing up and saying, this bill is bad, whichever iteration of it was, because it was actually going to be really detrimental to the delivery of healthcare across the entire United States of America. What we need to do is to, I think, you know, taking a page out of what Senator McCain had suggested, right? Take a deep breath, take a step back, acknowledge the fact that there, I would ask my colleagues, and Republicans, even behind closed doors, will acknowledge, and some outwardly, that making sure that somebody isn't denied health insurance coverage because of a pre-existing condition, that's a good thing, right? We don't want to go back to a time when you shouldn't, despite the fact that some of their bills did. There are good things in that bill. Let's build on that foundation and actually take a step forward. Where do we go from here? Look, you saw Senator McConnell, majority leader, Republican majority leader, I think yesterday, say that if the President Trump would come out in support of that compromise between
Senate compromise between Patty Murray of Washington, the Democrat, and Lamar Alexander, the Republican of Tennessee,
that McConnell would support it, right? If Trump would support it. So I think
Do you support that legislation?
Yeah. So I think, look, any compromise by definition isn't going to be the deal that I would necessarily want because it's a deal, right? But the most important thing that I think both parties need to do at the moment is take the politics out of healthcare, take a couple baby steps and stabilize this.
But like, let me ask you this about original sin, if you will, because that's what Republicans regard the Affordable Care Act, because it was partisan, because it wasn't bipartisan and didn't have that collective national dual party buy-in. Mm-hmm. Was that a mistake?
Look, I think
This was before your time.
I know. But I think it's an important question. Mm-hmm. For the durability of large legislation mm-hmm. in this country. And this mm-hmm. show is about things that are durable and that last in America and that work. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to figure out what those things are.
And so, look, would it have been stronger if there was bipartisan buy-in on it? Yes. I don't think there's any debate about that. Was there a significant effort over the year plus that the ACA was debated in Congress to try to get that bill put in place? Was there delayed for a vote to try to get that Republican support? Yes, it was. Were they ultimately able to get Republicans on board? No, they weren't. Did that contribute, I think, to the partisan atmosphere around this, particularly given the fact that the bill had to get passed by reconciliation itself? Yes, I think that does. All of that being said, what I think Republicans have missed on this effort over the course of the past several years, culminating again over the past several months, is looking at this as a political question and not as a personal one. Because, again, healthcare is something that for most Americans, it's not something you're necessarily in health insurance coverage. It's not necessarily something you're focused on a day-to-day basis until, God forbid, you need to be. And then when you need to be, it's not just the question of, can my loved one get the care that they need? It's, can I afford to pay the bill after they do? And at that point, it's the only thing you think about. And injecting politics into this, you know, to my Republican colleagues that want to say, look, we'll just force this thing down. If you think that's a really good legislative strategy for the viability of your party going forward, look at the last 7 years and what's happened to Democrats and say, do you want to own the devastation of a healthcare system across the country? I don't think that's a sound electoral strategy.
Real quick, in 19 seconds, I just want to pick up on something. You said, take a deep breath. Is that possible in this political environment?
Look, we have to. And it's hard, and you guys know this better than anybody, right? But governing is supposed to be a long, hard, slow, steady grind. And sometimes circumstances don't allow it, but if we can get back there, I think that's where we need to be.
We do take our deep breaths in 19 seconds or less here at The Takeout. That's why you love the show so much. I'm Major Garrett, joined by Steve Shigaris. That's the voice of Congressman Joseph Kennedy III. We'll be back in a second.
In need of great talent for your business but short on time? You don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools, smarter tools. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, listeners to The Takeout can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/takeout. That's ZipRecruiter.com/takeout. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/takeout.
You're listening to The Takeout.
And so thoroughly enjoying this audio and visual experience. I'm Major Garrett, Chief White House Correspondent, CBS News, joined as I am every week by the world's greatest podcast and show sidekick, Steve Shigaris, Political Director of CBS News. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Major. Thank
you. We are joined by Joseph Kennedy III, Member of Congress from the 4th District of Massachusetts. Congressman, we have a kind of a limited swag inventory at The Takeout show. Limited, very limited, very limited swag. This is it. This constitutes the sum total of all of our swag. Stickers, signed by me.
How about that?
Now, we hope you'll appreciate this.
You need to sign this too, Steve.
We have a very retro means by which our cherished viewers and listeners can obtain said sticker. Very retro.
Uh-oh.
I hope you'll appreciate it. Steve, explain to our listeners, new and existent, how they get this.
Well, if you'd like your very own Takeout podcast sticker signed by Major, send your request along with a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Self-addressed stamped envelope.
Takeout sticker. Care of CBS News at 2020 M Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. 20036.
Self-addressed stamped envelope. Hope you dig that, Congressman.
I do.
We do not take any electronic requests at all. You can't tweet us about it. Facebook us.
Wow.
You can't Instagram us. You can't Snapchat us. You can't do anything new or even yet to be imagined in the social media sphere. You have to send us a self-addressed stamp.
Supporting the Postal Service.
Indeed,
good for you guys.
And many other things.
There you go.
Basically, just the 70s is what we're supporting. I think that's basically
sure.
it.
Sure.
Go for
so, it. So, this podcast is being recorded during the week of an expected release of documents, the only remaining documents as yet to be released about the Kennedy assassination. Mm-hmm. We're recording this before that actual date, so we're somewhat hamstrung, but I want to play for our audience something, Congressman, you said on this topic, and then I want to have Steve ask you a question. Arden?
These are documents that obviously have been kept behind closed doors for an awful long time, and I absolutely tend towards disclosure of government held documents. That being said, it would have been nice if there was some communication between this administration and members of our family.
You mentioned members of your family. We won't get into the documents, but as someone with, as Politico put it, a famous last name and a wavy red mane, is having the Kennedy name a burden or
that's
a benefit
political for you,
or is having
sounds
the
like
wavy
Faulkner,
name,
doesn't it?
Wavy red mane, a burden or benefit? No, but the name, is it a burden or a benefit to have that Kennedy name?
Look, it is absolutely a benefit. There's no doubt about it. I am obviously, as you can imagine, very proud of the contribution that my family has made to our country, whether that's through elective service, military service, or otherwise. It's a family that has had an awful lot of support from an awful lot of folks over the years. We've had our successes that have been very public, and we, like many families, have our troubling times as well, and those have been public too. But I think, you know, Steve, the part that often gets lost in all of this, and including, I think, in a bit of this debate, is when I get asked that question, which is frequent, right? Everybody focuses on the first part of that question, the Kennedy part, and less on the family part, right? It's a family, right? It's brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and cousins and a lot of them. But we're a family, and it's an incredible family, and it's an incredible thing to be a part of, to know that...
Frequently described as a competitive family.
Not unlike other Irish Catholic families or other families, period, right? It is a competitive family, but it is a competitive family that knows that no matter what happens, no matter where you are in the world, no matter what good may come or what ill may fall, that you always know that there's going to be someone there to help you and support you and pick you up again. But, and that is... that's what keeps us coming together again as a family every summer, every Thanksgiving, because you can scatter to every corner of the globe, but it means that when something does happen, people are there for you.
You are a three-term congressman, 37 mm-hmm. years old. You are the de facto spokesperson for the family at this point, correct? I mean, seriously, you are the highest, at least federally elected member of the Kennedy clan. Is that a burden, being the face almost?
So when a question like this about the assassination documents come, they... Reporters come to you. What's the family think? Well, let's go to Joseph Kennedy III.
One thing that you learn pretty quickly in my family is that if you try to be a spokesperson for all 180 of us, there is no said spokesperson, right? So I hesitate to ever speak on behalf of my entire family. There's a lot of people there with divergent views and viewpoints. I am a public official, so yeah, reporters are going to ask me, right? I'm at an event at a farmer's market, and a reporter asks a question, so you're in a position where you need to answer.
Obligated to answer it.
And I think, again, my family members understand that, but it is not, we do have, it's a big family, it's a diverse family. We've had different experiences, we've gone through different, studied different things and engaged in different professions and try to contribute back our own certain way. And so I don't ever try to pretend to speak for on behalf of my entire family in a way that I don't think would be reflective of something that my family would universally stand behind.
Let's talk about the larger family as I finish my
delicious turkey.
I can see the tweets
club.
Right now.
Exactly.
But Major's chewing.
Look, folks, when I say this show is built around a meal, I mean every way,
Major's
shape,
not
and form.
Kidding.
Get in my belly!
This show is built around a meal. Let's talk about the larger family. What family am I talking about? The Democratic Party family. Talk about a combustible family that is. We had Seth Moulton on this program not too long ago. He sat at this very table here at the Dubliner. And we asked him about the 2018 midterm elections for the House, very important to Democrats, and the current leadership. Arden, let our listeners hear what Seth Moulton had to say. So let me just put this in very stark terms. You head into the 2018 midterms. You want this leadership team to be the bumper sticker for the Democratic House minority or not?
No, I don't.
You'd like to see the leadership changed before the 2018 elections?
I think we're going to have a much better chance of winning if it does.
Hmm. Do you agree with that, Congressman?
Look, Seth is a good friend.
Sounds like a no. Sounds like a no. Whenever it starts off with blank is a good friend, that means no.
As an aside there, I know we don't have a whole ton of time left. I remember being down here once with my dad when I was a little kid. and he was at a committee hearing, and he said something, and a Republican across the dais started with this like 30-second introduction about how great he was, and he turned to me and said, "This means they really hate the idea." Yeah. However long the thing is nice to begin with is exactly how bad it's going to come back.
You know who uses that a lot is our president. He's a good man.
Good man.
And then they're out the door.
So there you go. Seth is a good man and a good friend. I happen to disagree with him on this point. Look, the bottom line on this is... when it comes to leadership of a caucus, one, our leadership just won an election not even a year ago, and they won overwhelmingly. So our leaders have the support of the Democratic caucus, one. Two, when it comes to the overall discussion about either messaging or a national message or the importance of, look, when it comes to House races, a lot of this is decided by the quality of the candidate that you have, how reflective their vision and values are of the district that they seek to represent. You got to go out there and make a case. And if there are members out there that think that they can do a better job of making a case for the Democratic values and vision that our party seeks to lead our nation with, then nothing's stopping you. Nothing.
Right.
I didn't have to ask Mr. Hoyer or Ms. Pelosi's permission to come on this show, right? No one's stopping me from trying to go out there and give a speech someplace and to try to drive that message to say, I think that there's a different direction we need to head in. One thing about this town, you got to earn this stuff. And if people feel like there needs to be a change there, then by all means, go make that case. But there's no shortcuts here, right? You're talking about elected officials that have earned a vote.
Is it harmful for Democrats to approach the midterm elections with this kind of internal dialogue going on? Because not just Seth Moulton, though we said it on this show, other members of the Democratic caucus have said the same thing, amplifying what Seth Moulton said.
And so I think, look...
Bad idea to have that conversation?
I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea to have the conversation. What I do think is that there are... A Republican Party under Donald Trump has put forth a specific vision about what they think are the right values and policies for this country. And I think overall, it is a zero-sum game. In order for somebody to win, somebody else has to lose. In order to extend health care somewhere, we're taken away from someplace else. That, I think, is inherently contradictory to what this country stands for, and I think we need to be making that case, not focusing on something else.
That's the voice of Joseph Kennedy III, and you are listening to and very much enjoying The Takeout.
You're listening to The Takeout.
And isn't it fun? I'm Major Garrett, Chief White House Correspondent of CBS News, joined as I am every week by Steve Shigaris, Political Director of CBS News. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Major.
So politics, politics, politics. Our guest, Congressman Joseph Kennedy III. Ask him, Steve, about New Hampshire and 2020.
Well, I do want to sort of frame it. You did say in the last segment that there are no shortcuts.
Nope.
And I'll get into, I think, another question. But I do want to point out a poll that came out last week. That was an open-ended Democratic primary poll in New Hampshire. And granted, it's October of 2017.
A wee bit early.
But they asked people to just, they asked Democratic primary voters in New Hampshire to throw some names out of people that they would like to see run. You came in at 3%, which was just behind Senator Elizabeth Warren at 4%, which was in the top five. So my question to you is, are you thinking about running for president in 2020?
So you're saying there's a chance, right?
I don't know.
At that 3%.
1% behind Elizabeth Warren. I think she's had a little bit more earned media than you have.
Just a tad.
I think the world of Senator Warren, first off.
Do you think the world of the Democratic primary voters in New Hampshire? Because they, 3% of them named you.
I do think the world of Democratic primary voters in New Hampshire. I think they're very smart and engaged voters from knocking on a whole ton of doors there over the course of the past several presidential cycles for our nominee. And I expect to be doing the same thing for our nominee, who I do not expect to be me.
Cut to the chase moment. Are you running, yes or no?
No.
No way.
Ruling it out.
That's
the ironclad, shaggy question. Yeah. Ruling out. Because we got Chris Murphy to rule it out, and that blew up on the internet.
Well, there you go. So I went through this back and forth with somebody once. That are you running?
Another hat said, not in the ring.
And I said, no. And they said, well, you're not running? I said, no, I'm not running. I said, so you aren't running now, but you could run later. I said, well, I'm not running later, so you don't have any plans to run. No, I don't have any plans to run. So does that mean you're not running? I said, I don't know what else to tell you.
Every iteration.
Ruling out a 2020 presidential campaign.
I have no... ruling that out, yes, period.
Bernie Sanders running as an independent. Good idea or bad?
I think... I think given the state of where our country is in, given the challenges that we face, what our country needs more than anything is actually a big competitive field to go out there and make the case to the American public as to whose values, vision, and pathway forward are able to unify the country. And so whether Senator Sanders wants to run, that's a question for Senator Sanders. I don't think at this point it should be anybody, particularly any Democrat, sitting there saying somebody should not run.
The question more is he an authentic Democrat? Because he was not a member of the Democratic Party, then he ran as a Democrat, and now he seems to be having misgivings about that. The authenticity factor, I think you would agree, looms large in American politics.
I think the authenticity factor does loom large. It's not for me to say whether Senator Sanders is or is not a Democrat. I think that's a choice that he can make as to whether he feels like he should run under a Democratic banner, and candidly as to whether Democratic voters are going to support him or not. I think American politics gets into trouble when we start labeling, throwing out labels of are you this or are you that? Major, from knocking on my own fair amount of doors for my own races and for other candidates and colleagues, right? Politics is about people, and people are complicated. People don't necessarily...
Chigueras is really complicated.
We won't get into that here.
People don't always necessarily have a completely unwavering, clear ideological line about where they stand on certain issues, right? They're people. What I think is most important at the moment is we have seen a vision about a direction for that Donald Trump is seeking to take this country and this administration, and I think it is a dangerous and destructive one. That being said, it is undeniable that he struck a chord with millions of Americans across the country that believe that their government was not speaking to their concerns and their aspirations, and Democrats have to take a lesson from that. We have to show that we can, in fact, seek to be a big tent party, that we are able to unite the country around a vision. And yeah, Trump, the president, has given us plenty to run against. It's up to us to also come up with what you want to run for. And I expect that there'll be a robust debate about that going forward.
On that point, there's a Democratic mega donor named Tom Steyer who is
starting
this movement to get people on the record about whether they support a Trump impeachment movement. Let's play a little bit of what he has to say.
A Republican Congress once impeached a president for far less. Yet today, people in Congress and his own administration know that this president is a clear and present danger, who's mentally unstable and armed with nuclear weapons. And they do nothing. Join us and tell your member of Congress that they have a moral responsibility to stop doing what's political and start doing what's right.
Two questions. One, do you think this president is a, quote, clear and present danger? And secondly, do you support this impeachment movement?
First, do I think he's a clear and present danger to the American public? Look, I do not believe that the values, vision, and policies put forth by this administration are reflective of the best that America has to offer and will take us in a good direction. I think that his strategy, to the extent that there is one, that has been put forth on some of the greatest threats that we've seen around our world, nuclear proliferation, an impending crisis with North Korea, the proliferation of nuclear arms throughout the Middle East, I don't think that his policies put forth, it's been actually an abdication of leadership. It has not been the willing embrace of it. Trying to say that Iran has violated the JCPOA when they, by all accounts, they haven't. His administration even said that they hadn't technically. And kicking that to Congress isn't showing a firm direction forward for this administration. It's saying whatever Barack Obama did was wrong.
And right, but that's, Congressman, yeah. With all due respect, yeah. That's a stopwatch answer. You're trying to run out the clock.
No.
Yes or no? clear and present danger, yes or no?
I have a strong concerns with the way he's doing it. Does he pose a clear and present danger to the United States? I'm not sure I'd go there yet. That being
impeachment,
said.
Impeachment, yes or no?
I think there needs to be. I'm no fan
of supporter.
It's a
weighty question. I'm not pretending
yes.
It isn't.
So, Major, I think written respectfully back. Look, when you start talking about the impeachment, the early removal of power of the President of the United States, it behooves the American public or our government to make sure that that this isn't something that's going to be used, taken lightly. And I have utmost respect for Mr. Steyer. I do think that there's, I have concerns that some of the actions of this administration have already violated the Constitution. I do think that needs to play out a bit. I was a prosecutor before I came to Congress. I tried plenty of cases. I lost some I thought I was going to win. But I also know that you I won some I thought I was going to lose. You want to have this process play out before you call somebody guilty or innocent.
So to use a term you used earlier, there are no shortcuts.
There are no shortcuts.
So before we go and wrap up the show, I want to get your general sense of, if you can, 35 seconds. Priorities for the opioid crisis, and is this administration taking it seriously? I know I'm short-circuiting you there.
Priorities for the opioid crisis. One is get more of these pills off the streets. And there's far too many prescriptions that are being written in this country. We're doing a good job of the progress is being made, but we still got to do more. Two, engagement in, of our law enforcement community to help them have the tools that they need. Three, this is a mental health crisis. Addiction is a mental health crisis. You cannot sit there and try to say that this is a mental health issue and then gut funding for Medicaid, which is the largest payer of mental health services in the country. We need to double down on this. You need to roll up your sleeves and lean into it. I would urge the administration to do so.
That's the voice of Joseph Kennedy III. I'm Major Garrett, joined by Steve Shigaris. You have been listening to and so thoroughly enjoying The Takeout.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari and Katiana Krachenko. CBSN production by Alex Zuckerman and Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, visit takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News Radio.
You know, people don't understand. I went to an Ivy League college. I was a nice student. I did very well. I'm a very intelligent person.
Mr. President.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post. Help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit. And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish, all in one place. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, listeners to The Takeout can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/takeout. That's ZipRecruiter.com/takeout. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/takeout.